Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Ben Weingarten joins the program as we talk about the latest in the Biden documents. And then Senator Ron Johnson, who I'm thrilled won his re-election, joins us as well. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support our program at charliekirk.com/support and get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. The midterms were definitely underwhelming, but one of the victories that I was most thankful for, that I was pleased to see, was the reelection of Senator Ron Johnson from the great state of Wisconsin, and boy, did he earn re-election. A ton of money came in from out of state against him. They spent early, and he won. He won convincingly, and he has earned that seat. He has been a terrific representative from Wisconsin on the issues that many senators have decided to run away from. Senator Ron Johnson was early just asking questions about the vaccine safety, about vaccine efficacy, and he leaned into that even when he was 12 months out from an election cycle, and I'm sure some consultants say stay away from it, and he still won his election, and he really earned it. And Senator Ron Johnson joins us right now. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Oh, Charlie, hope you're doing well.
I am. Thank you. So, Senator, let me ask you about the $1.7 trillion omnibus bill. You did not vote for it, but it was very disappointing to see some of your colleagues rush this through. I'd love your reaction to that and also your reaction to the new House rules that will hopefully prevent another omnibus of this size and this kind of a monstrosity ever from passing again.
Well, I obviously was disappointed that we had so many Republican senators join with the Democrats to pass a bill that nobody read. Nobody knows what all's in it. They certainly understand some of the elements. We as a conference, as Republican Senate conference, we have a resolution against earmarks. And that, yeah, now there have been two pieces of legislation where we've signed up, or some of us have, up to the trough and accepted the earmarks and then gone back to our states and bragged about it. So it's pretty repulsive. There's certainly a group of us that fought pretty hard against it. We tried to raise public awareness, trying to deter our Republican colleagues from supporting it, but in the end they did. You know, the day after my election, I wrote a piece that the Wall Street Journal ran. This was hoping that we would have a majority in the Senate, and it just laid out this is how we ought to handle being the majority. You can apply the same thing to the House, and I think what the House did in their leadership, the battle over the speakership, they you know, pretty well embraced an awful lot what I was talking about, passing a budget, and it returned function to the Congress. And you start doing that by passing a budget. Now, hopefully it is a very conservative budget, coming as close to balance as possible, which we're tantalizingly close. Charlie, I mean, just, I know people don't like numbers, but we had revenue of $4.9 trillion last year. That's what we spent in 2019 before the pandemic. But we've gone on this spending blowout where we're up to, you know, well over $6 trillion spending a year. And, you know, there are people in both parties that are, they're happy to do that. But pass a budget as close to balance as possible. If you can't balance it, okay, you're going to have to increase the debt ceiling. We're not going to default under debt, but use the debt ceiling the way it was designed to be used. Attach to it fiscal controls. I laid out four pieces of legislation I'd like to see: Preventing Government Shutdown Act, Full Faith and Credit, the RAINS Act, and then reduce the size of the federal government through Attrition Act. Those would be four fiscal controls that if they would attach that to a debt ceiling increase, I'd vote for it. And then use that budget to drive an appropriation process where you bring up these bills. They'll still be massive. They'll still be grotesque. But at least it'll give all of us an opportunity to take a look at what we're spending our money on in a more detailed way, more thoughtful way. And hopefully we can avoid this not even end of year, it's into the next fiscal year, where you're passing these minibuses or omnibuses that, again, nobody reads. It's negotiated by, you know, staff members of a few, you know, the leadership, you know, appropriation chairs and congressional and White House leadership. And you get an up or down vote. And generally it's clogged, chock full of all kinds of crap that we should not be passing in the federal government. Again, our system is completely broken here.
And it's unsustainable. I mean, you've been talking about this for years. The fiscal health of the nation is in dire straits. And there's only so many things you can do. Doesn't matter how creative your ruling elite think they are. You can raise interest rates, you could cut spending or raise taxes or inflate your way out. That's about it. There's not a lot of other options at your disposal. And I'm afraid we're going to be left with no option but inflate our way out of this in a long-term growth cycle. We're going to say, hey, you got to get used to 7 to 10% annual inflation, which would just be a catastrophe for the integrity of the U.S. dollar and for middle Americans in more ways than one. So, Senator, I also want to ask you about this dialogue you had with Chuck Todd. I thought you handled it really well. And Chuck Todd couldn't, I mean, he just set you up so perfectly in a sense where he said, and I'm going to play the tape here, do you have a crime that you think Hunter Biden has committed? And I just screamed at my TV. I said, how much time you got, Chuck Todd? My goodness. Play cut 46, and I want your reaction.
Do you have a crime that you think Hunter Biden committed? Because I've yet to see anybody explain it is not a crime to make money off your last name.
So, Chuck, you ought to read the Marco Polo report. Where they detail all kinds of potential crimes.
I mean, for Chuck Todd to say that is so incredible, whether it be illegal, unregistered foreign lobbying, money from the mayor of Moscow's wife, the Chinese stuff, not to mention just all the other domestic crimes that he might have committed. Senator, your reaction?
Well, Chuck Todd didn't want to hear about that. And that's where he started interrupting me once again. Again, he doesn't call me on and invite me on his show. And by the way, he hasn't invited me on his show for 2 years. Because we had a similar discussion, I guess we'll call it, 2 years ago after January 6th, where, again, he accused me of being an arsonist. I said, no, Chuck, you lit the fire. It's a biased media that certainly conservatives understand are helping to inflame our politics. So, again, people like Chuck Todd, leftists, don't really want to hear the other side of the story. They're so confident in their own liberal viewpoint that they don't really believe in free speech. And so he's, even though he's, you know, again, you're not going to see evidence if you never look for it. And so the left never looks for wrongdoing on their part. And it was unfortunate. I went on the show in good faith, hopefully to have a discussion, hopefully to be able to convey a conservative viewpoint to a broader audience. And it's really kind of strange too. I don't recall too many times, where you have a major news network anchor just completely insult a sitting U.S. senator. Go back into your little cocoon there. It's like, give me a break, you know? I mean, I tried to respond with respect, tried to respond with just the truth and integrity, but he was having nothing of it.
Well, I mean, you made Chuck Todd relevant for just a little period of time. His ratings are in the gutter. And I mean, look, you read the Marco Polo report. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, 459 potential crimes that Hunter Biden violated. Is that correct?
Well, that's what he's laying out. Again, I'm not saying that those are all correct, but what the Marco Polo report does is it just shows the contents of the Hunter Biden computer, and it is grotesque. And one of the things I pointed out on the show, for example, this was in our report, Hunter Biden, over the course of 5 months between 2018 and 2019, spent about $30,000. This isn't all he spent. This is over that time frame on prostitutes associated with a Eastern European sex ring. This same time when Joe Biden was offering to pay about $100,000 of Hunter Biden's expenses. Now, I don't know. I think soliciting prostitution is a crime. And what is grotesque about it is, you know, these women that are in these sex trafficking rings are being sex trafficked. I don't think they're charging Hunter Biden, you know, thousands of dollars because they're doing it out of their own free will. I mean, there's something happening here, and when you're engaging in that, you are engaging in vile behavior, and apparently that doesn't really disturb people like Chuck Todd. It should disturb everybody and Chuck Grassley and I tried to warn the American public prior to the 2020 election that if they elect Joe Biden, he's going to be a compromised president for a host of reasons. I mean, because of the conduct of his son, because of the foreign financial entanglements, because of his family's ties to the Chinese government and what they knew about those ties. And so now you have University of Pennsylvania takes over $50 million from Chinese donors. And then 160 members of their faculty write a letter to Merrick Garland saying, you know, shut down the China Initiative, which was the Department of Justice program to investigate Chinese theft of intellectual property. And Merrick Garland shuts it down. Mm-hmm. And we have a liberal media that just looks, if they even look at it, they just shrug, oh, nothing to see here. There's all kinds of potential crime, all kinds of potential compromise that could definitely impact our national security. But the mainstream press isn't worried about that. They're just worried about Trump. And if you remember the whole Russian collusion hoax, the reason the media carried the water of that false narrative was all under the guise of, can you imagine how dangerous it'd be for America if an American president was compromised, those types of financial foreign entanglements.
Yep.
Well, Trump wasn't. Biden is big time. And mainstream media won't even cover it.
They won't touch it, but instead you have to be talked down to condescendingly by Chuck Todd. This is a new year, and that means you need a new investing strategy. If you are tired of corporations who continue to push their agendas, then you need to speak to my friends at Pax Financial Group. I trust my money with Pax Financial Group, and they are fiduciaries who take pride in the fact that they sincerely honor Christian values. The time is now for you to move your IRA, old 401ks, or other investments to an organization that will respect your values. Check out PaxFinancialGroup.com or simply text Charlie at 74868. Text Charlie to 74868. That is Charlie to 74868. So, Senator, unfortunately, being in the Senate minority, you're not going to have as much power to be able to subpoena or to be able to cross-examine witnesses, but you'll still get some time. Can you walk us through what your personal plans are to hold Fauci accountable and Walensky and the vaccine manufacturers?
Well, Charlie, you may or may not be aware, I've already sent close to 50 different oversight letters on a host of issues. One of the most troubling ones that I literally just got a back of the hand response was the end of December of 2021, where I was highlighting the apparent out of control manufacturing process where we show these hot lots. Let me just quickly lay out some numbers. So for the flu vaccine over 30 years, there's been one lot of flu vaccine that had 137 adverse events reported on the Bayer system. So again, for the flu, one lot, 137 adverse events. With the COVID vaccine, we have one lot that has 5,297 adverse events. We have 186 lots with over 1,000 adverse events. 80% of all U.S. Adverse events are associated with just 1% of the vaccine lots. 80% of serious adverse events are associated with about 5% of the lots. Now, I come from manufacturing. That is a manufacturing process on paper that looks completely out of control. It took the FDA almost a year to get back to me, and what they basically reported, the CDC, and they just said, well, we don't see any variation in lots. Okay, well, their Bayer system right now is showing almost 1.5 million adverse events, 33,469 deaths. By the way, 179 of those deaths are occurring within 6 months to 17-year-olds. 26% of the deaths are occurring on day 0, 1, or 2 following vaccination. So I realize they'll always say that the Bayer system is imperfect. It doesn't prove causation, but that would concern me. It's been concerning me since about March of 2021 when they'd already registered about 4,400 deaths. So I'll keep pressing the case. I may not be able to hold hearings, but what I've been able to do is bring some of these global experts, these doctors who have had the courage and compassion to treat COVID patients and speak out. I'll keep doing those events like I did last January in my COVID-19 second opinion event. December, we had a follow-up where we talked about the vaccines and how they could possibly be causing injuries. So, you know, Charlie, this is the main reason I ran. Nobody was advocating for the vaccine injured. Nobody's really admitting that they're vaccine injuries, and as a result, these people can't get help. So I'm going to focus on this. I'll certainly help Jim Jordan and James Conner as much as possible in their investigations. We're actually writing up a report right now of how our investigation was sabotaged by people, for example, in the FBI, Democrat lawmakers and others.
Wow.
So we'll do everything we can assist in the House oversight of the weaponization of the federal agencies. But I'm going to really focus on vaccine injuries and, the travesty of our response to COVID.
Well, God bless you for that, because there are not enough lawmakers that are doing that. This should be a bipartisan issue. It affects everybody. And, so Senator, when you bring up VAERS, their response is that, well, it's not accurate. I think it's actually undercounted potentially, because the process of filling out VAERS is not easy or simple. It is a 30 to 45 minute process to go through that. And now, Senator, we have this new wrinkle when it comes to some people are saying that the vaccine was not, properly approved, and the Moderna vaccine might even be put on pause in certain countries. And so, Senator, 1 minute remaining. Why is it that you are one of the few lawmakers that is willing to speak out or at least even ask questions about this topic?
Well, let's face it. Everybody was on board with this, as was I. I supported Operation Warp Speed. We should use far greater caution, but, other members produce videos, push, certainly encouraging people to get the vaccine. Doctors obviously ask their patients to do it. Nobody wants to admit that maybe they should have exercised some more caution. Maybe their advice caused harm. So we're in an enormous state of denial nationwide, quite honestly. But people have to recognize reality, and people who've been vaccine injured, they need help. And so we have to look at the truth. We have to look at facts, and that's certainly where I'm going to continue to pursue.
God bless you, Senator Johnson. Congratulations again. Please keep fighting, and we really appreciate your conviction towards what is good. Thank you so much.
Stay well.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. If all home air purifiers are the same, why did the U.S. Department of Defense select EnviroCleanse to protect and purify the air on board our Navy ships? Because EnviroCleanse advanced mineral technology goes beyond ordinary HEPA filters that destroy airborne illness causing cold and flu viruses, including COVID. EnviroCleanse is the new science in air purification. Now you could order one for your home. This is how to help stop colds and flu from taking your whole family down. This is how you destroy allergy-inflaming toxins and mold from the air your family breathes. In fact, the hospital-grade technology is so powerful that it promises far fewer colds and allergies and better sleep. Visit ekpure.com and use promo code CHARLIE for 10% off your EnviroCleanse home air purification unit. You'll also receive a free air quality monitor plus fast free shipping. That's $150 in savings. That's ekpure.com, promo code CHARLIE, ekpure.com, promo code CHARLIE. So check it out right now. Great company, ekpure.com, promo code CHARLIE. Joining us now is Ben Weingarten from Real Clear Investigations. Ben, welcome to the program. We have actually not been covering the Biden document story nearly as much as the mainstream press or most conservative media. Not that I don't believe it's important. I just think other issues are actually more important. World Economic Forum in Davos. And so I'll admit, I haven't been tracking this hour by hour. Walk me through it. Walk our audience through. What is the latest? There's a special counsel. What do we know? And we'll go from there.
Yeah, and I think, incidentally, there's a link here between this story and the WEF and some of the broader themes that you focus on, which is that we have, once again, the national security and law enforcement apparatus, in effect, interfering in our domestic politics at the highest levels with dueling special counsels. And it hasn't really been framed this way, but dueling special counsels into two leading candidates for the presidency in 2024 on virtually the same grounds, although obviously significant differences over the classification authority that each of these men have. Of course, Donald Trump, then outgoing president, versus Joe Biden, then outgoing vice president, when these documents were reportedly taken. So where we are now is that we now know that Joe Biden appears to have had classified documents that he had no right to take when he left the office of the vice presidency back in 2017, not only discovered at the Penn Biden Center, but also in his garage at his Delaware residence, as well as, I think, elsewhere in that residence, We know that purportedly these documents were first uncovered at the Penn Biden Center by his personal lawyers mere days before the midterm elections. That's your first hint that this is suspect. We're also, of course, talking about documents that were removed 6 years later, now all of a sudden being found by personal lawyers, and why they were moving these documents 2 years after he had entered the presidency at the Penn Biden Center. Of course, very questionable. A couple other points I would make about the timeline, because I think it's important context here. The Biden papers revelations, despite federal authorities knowing about them back in November, did not become publicly known until literally the first business day after Republicans got their house in order. That is, after Kevin McCarthy was elected speaker. We knew, of course, that the Republican House would be probing Biden and the deep state. So the second day after that House is seated with McCarthy as speaker, the House votes to create this new church-style subcommittee at House Judiciary. Of course, that subcommittee is focused on the targeting of conservatives by the DOJ and FBI, which would include, of course, the Mar-a-Lago raid and the rest of the jihad against Trump. Just 2 days after that committee is established, what does the deep state do? They create a special counsel to look into Joe Biden over the very same thing they putatively were raiding Donald Trump over, which is this handling of classified documents. I'll add one more point on the timeline to add to some intrigue, because I've written about kind of viable theories about what's going on here. It just so happens that, of course, a president can actually serve 10 years if they replace a seated president for the last 2 years and then get elected twice. So, of course, we're now just about at the 2+ year mark of Joe Biden's presidency. And if he were to be shunted aside after January 20th, then Kamala Harris could assume that office and she could theoretically be president 10 years. Now, however improbable it is to imagine her actually getting elected president, the option is there. And so what I've looked into is, you know, look at that timeline and tell me that this doesn't smell beyond fishy. It just so happens we're finding these documents and Joe Biden is now being probed by the DOJ on the very same grounds that the DOJ was probing Donald Trump. And then look to who benefits by pursuing Joe Biden. And that's what I lay out in this article at the Epoch Times today.
Yeah, and that's the old Latin phrase, qui bono, who benefits, right? So I'm going to ask you about that in a second. But I've said this before. I don't think this is a good law. I say that for Trump and Biden. It's kind of like a deep state landmine that can be detonated at any time to take you out. Because, I mean, okay, these are documents. And now Joe Biden was vice president. He mishandled them. He was sloppy with them. And Trump had its Secret Service protected. But the essence of it is we're going to be able to come after you because we don't like you. That, it doesn't feel constitutionally robust in any way, shape, or form, as if this kind of shadow government can go find some sort of criminal code, USC, whatever, and be like, we don't like you, we're going to take you out. Obviously, I lose no sleep the fact that Joe Biden is being targeted, but like, who has the answer the question, though, who does benefit from a crossfire operation against Joe Biden?
Well, yeah, and also, you're absolutely right. This has been weaponized before to go after people handling of classified documents that the regime does not like. And it's also worth noting, they come up with all sorts of pretexts to go after people they don't like. Look back to FARA, of course, Foreign Agent Registration
Right. It was
Act.
Never used since the 1930s. Or like a bunch of Cubans in like the 1990s, they used it. And then Michael Flynn, right? One after the other. More laws, the less justice, as Cicero would say. Continue.
So to who benefits from this? The obvious is, if you believe that Joe Biden's useful life as a vassal for the entire radical progressive agenda is just about over, you don't really have use for him anymore now with a Republican House that in theory, let's hope, is going to completely stonewall and stop the Biden agenda. And with how bad a look he has generally in the baggage around him as the figurehead for your party, now would obviously be a good time to step aside, Joe, or potentially we could unleash a barrage of far more damaging things on you if we're really going to have the DOJ and FBI probing you, or at minimum, do not run in 2024. And of course, we've seen reports talking about how Biden intends to run in 2024. Holding this over Joe Biden's head, particularly, let's note, when the New York Times, literally within hours of when we just started hearing about the Biden papers, did a new fresh report on how Hunter Biden's prosecution itself maybe in the final stages. If you hold this over Joe Biden's head, there's a lot of leverage here to either get him A, to step aside, which some Democrats would probably like. Kamala Harris would probably like it. B, to get him not to run in 2024. Or C, to simply say this. Joe, Hunter Biden is facing prosecution here. We obviously have infinitely more dirt just on your laptop alone, which we've been sitting on for years. So wouldn't you want to walk away on, you know, the relative slap on the wrist here of being probed over mishandling of classified documents, then actually go down the road of having the deep state sicked on you six ways from Sunday, as Chuck Schumer infamously said mm-hmm. about Donald Trump? So there's obvious reasons why Democrats would stand to benefit. And for the deep state, this provides a substantial leverage. But for the deep state itself, it has a much deeper vested interest here beyond the fact that obviously now has substantial control over the 2024 race, obviously, yep. by having these dueling special counsels. Of course, I think the timing is significant. You know that the FBI and DOJ are the primary targets of this weaponization subcommittee. So what do they do to try to staunch that blow, to try and deflect from the idea that they were targeting conservatives? Well, of course, they say we're going to open up an investigation into Joe Biden on the very same grounds that you were going to be probing us over Donald Trump and raiding Mar-a-Lago. So look, we play both sides the same way and on the same grounds, of course. So even if the American people don't buy that, consider that now that the special counsels are engaging in these probes, you can imagine how much they will stonewall Republicans seeking to investigate these ongoing investigations. Beyond that, think about this. If the case against Donald Trump was pretty weak on mishandling of classified documents, and you know this was a pretext to begin with to get this shock and awe raid at Mar-a-Lago with a show me the man, I'll show you the crime sort of justice system. Now, if you know you can't really make the case that was a legitimate raid and it was really over classified documents, you can ultimately say we are going to act fairly impartially and independently and drop any such charges against Donald Trump, but also drop them against Joe Biden. See, we treated Democrats and Republicans equally here, but we will prosecute Donald Trump on a whole slew of other charges, including potentially obstruction or charges related to January 6th and the 2020 election. So provide substantial optionality here. And let's note something that I raise in my piece. This isn't the first time that the DOJ / FBI and other agencies, by the way, have been probing two candidates in an election. Of course, in 2016, while you know the deep state did not want Donald Trump to be president at all costs, and they exonerated Hillary Clinton early with Jim Comey drafting the exoneration early, still in the waning days of that race, note that they raised Anthony Weiner's laptop and the emails on that laptop, much to Hillary Clinton's chagrin. They played at both sides. They hedged their bets. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to look to how does the DOJ, FBI, and broader national security and law enforcement apparatus benefit here. And I think it's clear that they're showing that they are superior essentially to the current president and that they ought to have their say over who the next president is, no matter what. And that speaks to how damaging and disturbing it is
yes.
when you have what's supposed to be a republic, but an unelected fourth branch of government that wields total power. And as we've seen with the Twitter files and lots of other interventions, is integrally intertwined yep. with they, our domestic
they,
political
they've become
process.
The sovereign, and it's not sustainable. I want to ask about this piece here, critical questions for a church-style weaponization committee. Walk us through it.
Yeah, the church-style committee is something that I've been advocating for some time. The all of the elements of the war on wrong think that our national security and law enforcement apparatus have been engaged in, it's such a vast regime that has run roughshod over so many of our most fundamental rights. And so naturally, given how powerful that regime is, I think it behooves leadership, starting with Jim Jordan, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, under which the subcommittee is going to sit, and I believe he's chairing this committee as well, to be very not only strategic and thoughtful, but as tenacious as the left was with the January 6th committee, except in this case, in pursuing actual transparency and accountability, and then getting to legislative remedies with real teeth around how you prevent the total corruption, hyper-politicization, and weaponization of this apparatus from ever happening again. And so what I lay out in this piece are just a few simple questions that I think ought to guide the thinking as this committee comes to fruition, starting with, who is going to staff this thing? Because personnel is policy, and the pressure the staffers and not only the members, the House members who are going to sit on it, but their personnel are going to be under is going to be immense if they actually start getting towards the truth about the whole size, scope, and nature of the weaponization of the apparatus. You know, I write in the piece essentially that if every member is treated just like Devin Nunes was on the House Intelligence Committee, and that they're surveilled by the DOJ, just like Kash Patel, we recently found out, was, then you'll know that the members and the staffers are doing their job here. Beyond that, there has to be prioritization because there are just so many different areas where we've seen such asinine and brazen acts of, frankly, intimidation and targeting that they need to be laser focused on a few major things, I believe, rather than trying to grab everything out of the sun.
What do you think those should be?
Yeah, to my mind, it's obvious, of course, that this censorship regime that we've seen enacted between the deep state, big tech, and not just the social media platforms, but tech companies writ large is a huge one. Because if you are violating the First Amendment, and they did that repeatedly, then all the other amendments ultimately fail if that's gone. So that's obviously number one. I do think that the targeting of wrong thinkers using essentially war on terrorism authorities against domestic dissidents, wrong thinkers in this country, is a massive category. You could go a lot of different directions with that. Look, frankly, because John Durham, I don't think, really exposed what happened at Russiagate. Russiagate itself could be the focus of this thing. I'm not saying that that should necessarily be the focus. But look, we can talk about targeting of January Sixers and then perhaps even the DOJ's coordination with Democrats, with the January 6th committee, making process punishment there and then referring those purported prosecutable acts to authorities could certainly be encompassed under it. You know, you can obviously look at targeting pro-lifers, not targeting those who have firebombed them. There are so many different areas. So I think it's really incumbent to prioritize just a few, and I've named some of the leading ones, I think, there. And then beyond that, you have to be ready for the counter assault. And we've already seen,
really quick,
go back to Mar-a-Lago. We've already seen the attack on anyone who would dare touch on these areas and want to expose deep state corruption. So you have to anticipate that they're going to come at you with everything they possibly have. So they really need to think through very carefully how they get around the obstruction, the stonewalling, and then the information onslaught they're going to be under.
We call that the labyrinth of their creation. It's the fourth branch of government maze. Trapdoors, smokes and mirrors, they got to be ready for it. Thanks so much, Ben. Great commentary as always. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.